access your number 21020 Real 2.
Trevor Maclis, Real 2. So you're saying you were near Cuxhaven?
Yeah, a place, a little town called Gluckstadt, and we were there for nigh on 3 years.
So how was it that you met your first German wife?
Well, what happened was I got friendly with a young German woman in Gluckstadt, and she used to do my, when the, because the war had ended then, you see, a few weeks before. And as soon as the surrender was made, the whole division, Rutumdama division, got their position where they had to go to, you see, to different towns. And we went to this place called Gluckstadt, and that was an ex-naval base, being near where you now said
Denmark.
That's near the, no, it's on the seafront, North Sea, more or less. And they had a barracks there for the German Marines, and that's where my battalion was stationed in. But as soon as the war ended, I thought to myself, well, I've had enough soldiering, doing guards and all the rest, and duty in the trenches and all that sort of thing, 2 hours on and 4 off and that sort of thing. I had enough of that. And the officers, they had to find where they were going to find some batmen and that sort of thing, look after them, because the officers were entitled to batmen, you see. And I had poor officers to look after, so the officers moved into a private house. They didn't go into the barracks, the officers didn't. They had their own private German houses, which we commandeered, you see, the army commandeered them. And I went in there as a batman. And I'd done that for several months, and then...
How did you like doing that?
I enjoyed it, yeah. And like I say, and then in the meantime, I'd met this young German woman. In fact, the fraternisation ban was still on. We weren't officially allowed to talk to the Germans, really, the young women and that sort of thing. And what happened was, we had to get our laundry washed. And I met this young woman, and she... I asked her if she could do my laundry and do some more laundry as well, belonging to officers and that sort of thing. Well, we did have the army used to send up lorries for with supplies and that sort of thing, and clean clothing and that sort of thing. But that was only used when the war was on. Once the war ended, they didn't come into use anymore, really. But everybody seemed to found their own way of getting the laundry done, you see. And like I say, I had to get my officer's laundry done as well. Otherwise, that meant I had to do it. And what I did was, and then they set up a nappy just outside the camp, outside the battalion HQ, where the barracks was. They set up a nappy outside, and I used to go there and buy 2 or 3 bars of soap and some whatever I could in the way of washing. And I used to give it to these, and I used to buy some bars of chocolate, because this young lady had one child, about two year old. And I bought the child some thing, and I used to give her some tin stuff, and that's what I used to buy in a nappy. And that I went on for some time, for several months. But then the battalion had to move down to Osnabrück, that was several hundred miles away. And the whole battalion left down to go, and then they went to another barracks down there, the battalion. But I didn't. I went into another big billet, looking after a major then. I didn't have to look after the lieutenants and lieutenants and first lieutenants and second lieutenants and captains. I looked after, I got a book there, and they were, one particular officer I worked with, his wife is an MP. I think his wife or his daughter, Liddell. She, you know Liddell in Scotland, got the head job in Scotland?
I think I've heard of
her. Yeah, well, she's now got that job, and that's the daughter, I think, because the mother would be too old now, she'd be about 80. And her father was a colonel, not a colonel, he finished up as a colonel, I think, but he was a major at the time, and I was looking after him, Major Liddell. And I got the books here, look, with his name on it, what I should have given to him. But what used to happen was, you see, because when the war ended later on, we went to Osnabrück, the wives came out to Germany and lived in the married quarters, you see, with the major, with my major, and they had 2 children as well, 2 young children. And like I say, one was a boy and one was a girl, and they were only about 2 or 3 years old. But in the meantime, over the years, Helen is now, I think, The one in the who's now what she is in the she was also the what's his name, the President Brown, who's the Chancellor Exchequer. She had a position with him, and then she got promoted to another job. Now she's gone up to Scotland to be in control of that. And anyhow, I see what I think it is. I think that's the daughter who was about 2 years old.
Why did you like it so much in Germany?
Well, I speak German as well a bit. Well, I say a bit. I got my television. I got Sky Television, and I have German programmes all night. I don't go to bed much. I have German programmes on all night, listening to them, watching them, films and whatnot. And I see all what go on in Russia and everywhere. Because if you have German programmes, they show you a lot of Russian films, and I see all that sort of thing. Because I've got Sky.
What was this about Germany that you liked?
I've always liked it ever since I entered Germany. And like I say, my second wife, who passed away now, she was German as well. But she, like I say, she came across from near Poland, a place called Cottbus in Germany, Dresden. You know Dresden? Well, they ain't far away from Cottbus, only about 20 minutes train ride, but where she lived, she lived about 2 miles from the border, Polish border, and that's where her village was, and that's where we every 2 or 3 years we used to go to her home. But on one occasion we went home on holiday, and one of my children was born. My boy was born, but my daughter wasn't then, and we got as far as Berlin. We went by train. We got on the ship at Harwich, went over to Hook of Holland, got on the train, and that's a long journey then to Germany. And got on the train, and like they always did do, the German people who check the passports and everything, they come on the train in the middle of the night and check them and that sort of thing. And you had to pay so many marks for them to put a stamp on in the passport. Yeah, I've got it all in there. It's all in the passports, how much I had to pay for each person. Well, not the children, but the grown-ups. And we were just entering Berlin, or just before Berlin. They told us we can't go no further, we've got to get off the train. Then what happened was, on this occasion, remember the Czechoslovakia business? Can you remember that? They wouldn't let any European from the West go in East Germany. And we had to, and my wife had an aunt lived in Berlin. And we had to get in. They said we can either stop in Berlin, in West Berlin or East Berlin, and in a hotel, but we wanted to go on to Cottbus, you see, that's where our parents lived. We wanted to go on to Cottbus, and they wouldn't let us. That ended up 5 days later before we got to Cottbus, before we got permission to go. But the Russians didn't want us to know what was going on, you see. They kept it, but that was already known in the War Office here, the Foreign Office, that they knew all of what was going on, because we got our spies about it anyhow. But we had to stop in Berlin, and we stopped at her aunt for about 3 days. There were about 24 of us, 24 children and grown-ups, and that all came from East Germany down to us. Because we couldn't go to them, they came to us for about 5 days, and then all the manoeuvres that were going on, the Russians were sent it all, and the East Germans were sent the transport over to Czechoslovakia, with the front war just started up again there. And but I didn't last too long, did it? I don't know if you remember that, dear. I didn't last too long. And after about 5 days, they let us go. So we then got back on the train again. We went on and finished our journey, if you understand what I mean. And that's all in the passports, because as soon as we got to East Germany, in Berlin, they stamped the books on the train in the middle of the night, if you were on the night train. Then you had to go to your town where you got to be. See, we were on holiday, and that was meant, that's in the passport as holiday. And we went to our town where we wanted to go to, which was Sella, and we had to go to the police and report to the police, and they put that stamp on it as well. You had to pay again there for every day we were there. We had to pay so much for every day we were there. But because we had 5 days in Berlin, we didn't have to pay so much, because we spent a fortnight, you see. Every time we went to Germany, my wife and the children, my children, We stayed for fortnight usually, you see, and went on the probably the day ship, and or went in the evening. No, we used to go in the evening sometimes, and then get on the, and take a cabin in the, on a boat with the children. And but if but before my children were born, we'd go in the cabin at night, and if we came back on during the day, we'd sleep, you know, like I was talking about a while ago, about having the reclining chairs. And that's what happened at that time when I said I saw this here thing on the floor.
So how did you come to meet your second German?
Like I had mentioned to you on a previous occasion, she came across, the war ended, and she was only young herself. She was only my age or younger, a few months younger than me. And she came across with a young couple who just got married in Germany, in East Germany. Came across the wall, across the American front, on the American sector. And she came across, and she settled, she finished up in Celle. And that's where, at a later date, I came with my battalion to Celle. That was some years later I'm talking about. But my wife was already there, and she'd spent, and I've got her passports here, you know, I've been looking at them, haven't you, I think? Did you see them? Her passports? She was several years in Celle, and she worked for a professor doing housework, you know, washing and whatever, house cleaning and whatever. And but she had her own little home, a little bedroom, and that was in a bakery where she lived. Well, I got photographs up there where the bakery shop is. And she worked daily for the professor, and then come home at night. And I got introduced to her what happened? I met another woman I met a different woman, an older woman in Celle. I've always have been through my life. I've always been what they call a loner on my own. I never had other people with me. Anyway, but not because I didn't like other people. I was happy being on my own. And I went in the bar and had a drink of beer in a German pub. And this woman asked me, she should be a lot older than me, but she's probably about 20 years older than me, but she must have known a young woman at that time, which I didn't know about. She must have known somebody who was younger, and she asked me if she could find a young woman for me, if she could find a young woman for me. And, you know, a couple of nights later, I made an appointment with her to come and see this young woman, and that was my wife. And that started from there.
But her parents were back in East Germany.
In East Germany,
Cottbus.
In Cottbus, yeah. A little village called Drebke.
What kind of a life were they living?
Very bad, yeah. I've got photographs here, the houses, what the houses are like. Never been repaired or anything. The conditions were very bad, and they're much the same now, because they haven't got the money to spend. The West Germans, although they're all one now, they haven't got the money to put into East Germany at the moment, because everything is tight.
Can you describe the conditions they were living in Cottbus?
They had jobs and that sort of thing. They had jobs to go to, but now they haven't. They're losing all the jobs now, because there's no work for them out in Germany at the present moment. And my wife's father, when he came out of the army, he was a prisoner of war, and he was going back and forth to the hospital because he had blown knees, you see, and they were trying to get all the water out of his legs. And anyway, in the meantime, he did come to England. He had a holiday in England with his wife, my mother-in-law. And what happened was, he worked in the factory before the war, when he was right young, about 1926 or something like that, when he was right young, when he first married my wife's mother. And when the war ended, he went back for that job, and he kept it till he retired. But when he did retire, he was getting old. In Germany, most families had what they call allotment, like they have here. They had their own garden, they have their own little house. If they got a garden where they live, they might be lucky. But if they haven't, they used to get from the council, from the whatever town they're in or wherever they live. They used to get a bit of land, but they could call it, but have an allotment, you see, and they had their own little shed on it, and that's where he used to grow his own vegetables. Well, what with that, and also if his wife was a bit of a nervous woman, she was allergic to silver. When she came here to England for 2 or 3 weeks, we had to put all the silver, well, anything silver, we had to put out of the way. She couldn't, she's allergic to it.
What did she think of England?
She everything was lovely, but she never got about it. Like she couldn't walk properly. She was getting on in the years, you see. After she left here, on this particular holiday when she was here in August, this particular year, she went home. And he passed away first, about a year later after they were back home, and then about another 6 months later she followed on. She died as well.
But what was
they
that?
Were heartbroken, I think, between they stuck together a lot as husband and wife, and because he died, that put that's in her sort of that way as well.
What was their house like in Cotswold?
Well, that was a council property, you know. They didn't have. There were very few private houses out there, very few, if any. Everything belonged to the state, and you had to pay the state rate, you know, rent. And they never done any repairs. But we know the war just ended, and nothing had been done during the war. And when Hitler was in power, He didn't put any money into that sort of thing, building houses, all he thinking about building tanks and things like that. Hitler was, Hitler was, and I'm talking about 1936 or even before when he first came into power. The money was all spent on arms and munitions. The council, all the council got was the rents from the people, and that was very small. Because when I joined the army, first of all, I only got about sixpence a day wages. In the old money, sixpence, my wages. And that's much the same in Germany as well, the wages were nothing.
Now, when you were demobbed after the war, I think you then rejoined the army.
I did, yeah, 3 years later.
Why did you decide to rejoin?
My first wife, who lived in Osnabrück, where I mentioned to you, she came across, when I came out of the army the first time, I got her to come over to England to marry. I got permission from my colonel with my regiment. I got permission to have her come across to England and marry, and she got a job as well at the same time. You see, and she worked at in Norwich. Yeah, she worked at what was then in those days Woolworths. Well, Woolworths had the shops there going, but the army, British forces had underneath in the basement the nappy. In Norwich here, the nappy was Woolworths, but in the basement, and they had snooker tables and all that sort of thing. And when I came out on holiday, my only holiday I had from Germany when I came out the first time, I used to go in the nappy there and play billiards and whatnot. And anyhow, she eventually came across to England, and we married in Norwich at the Register Office at the City Hall. And and by the way, the City Hall was built when remember Haw Haw? You know Haw Haw, don't you? He used to speak on the radio every night, so to speak, from Germany. He had an aunt living in Norwich here at Unbank Road here, and he used to visit. He used to come over across to England every so often, so he knew about the City Hall being built. Have you seen the Norwich City Hall? It's there, look. It's all in that book there. The City Hall, Norwich City Hall, big.
But you were telling me why you rejoined the army.
She came across and we married in the Red Trios here at Norwich. I had to find work when I came out of the army after my leave. I had about 6 weeks leave due to me, you see, and I had my leave. And I went down to the Labour Exchange in Norwich here, where I joined up with a recruiting office, which is nearby. And I went to the Labour Exchange and they found me a job, but the job was one what you wouldn't expect that anyone would have. They wanted men, they wanted men to go to Cambridge and dig up all the American dead and send them back to America. Cambridge, remember Cambridge, War Cemetery, where all the Americans who died in this area? And they had another one up in Scotland, I believe they got one up in Scotland as well.
Did you take the job?
And I took the job, and I was there for about 6 months. But I had to go in, and I had to go in for a a compound with a nishanat, where just men, and like a billet did that nishanat sort of thing, and going back and forwards every day to Cambridge, just outside Cambridge, where the cemetery was, and dig up all his dead. And I used to pick, because all of, and most of the Americans, they'd rotted to pieces. Because what happened was, they were buried in a cemetery, which they how can I put it? There was a main road and a minor road. One road was on a level, if you understand what I mean, on the level ground, and the other road was like a fork, if you understand what I mean, like this, like a fork. One road was straight and on a level, and the other road was on a level like that, like this angle. Well, the ground from the top of the, from the top road to the bottom ground was like that. And what they'd done was they'd been buried. They buried the one to the top first, and they were all right. They were in on dry land more or less. But when all the water was going down to the lower ground, and all the people that were buried at the bottom were all rotted. They were in coffins and that, and in uniforms and whatnot. And they'd all been through the morgue and everything and done. But there were so many being killed, Americans being killed, women as well, and stillborns as well, like died in London and that sort of thing. And they all got buried at Cambridge. And the water was all coming down to the lower part of the ground on the lower road, and there was no drainage, you see, and that's why they were right away. But the people up top, and the first one, what got buried, early part of the war, when the Americans came across, they got embalmed, you know, when they put the big needle. And I went there as well. I had to help them. We used to put them on the slabs and that, and wash them down with a hose, and then put all new uniforms on, put them in, they looked to be more like copper coffins, they were heavy things they were, and then we sent thousands of them back to America in the ship, on ships. Oh, they went by rail first to Southampton or somewhere, and then up to, and that went, I was down there for over 6 months.
How did you like doing that?
Well, I didn't mind doing it, for the simple reason that the Americans were paying the good money. And I was also able to get some free things from the Americans as well. The Americans are gamblers, they are card gamblers. And if they used to run short of anything, how do I put it? If they wanted money, and they used to give us cigarettes. You get loads of cigarettes, cheap cigarettes, the Pall Mall and all the rest, what they used to have, American cigarettes, and also whiskey and all the rest. Well, I used to take what they could give me, and I used to give them money. And the wages were good, and also, when the British government got that contract to do that, but the Americans were paying the British, the Americans were paying the British government, and but the Americans were paying our wages, if you understand what I mean. And we weren't paying tax then, in those days, when that first started, they said, business of picking up all the dead. We weren't paying tax, because the Americans were paying us. But then a private firm took over, and then they started taking tax from us. And that was when I sort of come back to Norwich again and left to finish the job.
So why did you rejoin the army?
And then I went back to my, because my wife was working in the, she was working at Woolworths in the restaurant, upstairs in the restaurant, cleaning the tables and giving like whatever to the customers in the shop, in Woolworths, in the restaurant. And unbeknown to me, that 6 months or more I'd been away in Cambridge, she met up with another young chap who'd been in the army, but he was only a national serviceman. He was in the Far East, in Malaya and that way. But he was about 12 years younger than me. And what happened was, he got demobbed, and his mother was a German from the First World War. From the First World War, his mother. And my wife, or my first wife, had got friendly with this woman who was German, or she had German blood in her, put it that way. Her mother, her parents were German, but they moved to England at some time or another, which I don't know nothing about that though. So they must have moved to England, and she was born in, she was living in England, not far from here, and must have taken British nationality and then married somebody here in Norwich here, and like I say, my wife was serving in the shop in the canteen there in Woolworths, and must have met this air woman and got pally with her, And in the meantime, her son had come back from the Far East, and my wife was, unbeknown to me, while I was in Cambridge, was going together, getting together, if you know what I mean. And I didn't know nothing at all about this. Anyway, when I came back from Cambridge, when I came out of the army, I had no clothes at all, because I joined up in the army cadets at 13 year old. And then when the war broke out, when they started bombing Norwich, I then joined up, because the colonel came round my door and asked me if I would like to join the Rifle Brigade or join the army, which I did. And I never had a chance to buy any grown-up clothes, or my parents never had the money anyhow. The wages were so low that my father was unemployed then, because that was when the recession was on, 1936. Things were bad then, you see. And there were seven children. He had to go to the labour exchange and draw seven shillings a week for all the seven children. We only got a shilling a week to feed us with and clothe us. Shilling a week, that's all it was. And even a bricklayer in those days only got a trained bricklayer only got a shilling a day. A shilling a day wages. That's how bad it was.
Can you tell me about joining the army in 1951?
She got pally with him, unbeknown to me, she bought me a pullover, she bought me a pullover in the shop in Norwich or somewhere, and took her home. She asked me when I came home from Cambridge, if I liked the pullover, because like I said, I had no clothes to wear. I was still wearing some of my army things, if you understand what I mean, when I came out of the army, and took this job in Cambridge. I still had a certain amount of army clothes, army shirts and that, anyway, she asked me if I liked the pullover, so I said yes, I did, and she only paid probably about a shilling for it anyhow. You can't buy one of these now under about £6 or more now, that's the difference. Anyway, so I said yes, I do, and the next few days when I bought a wearer, she'd given it to this young man. She'd given it to him. Anyhow, and I knew there was something going on, so we had a bit of a row, I said, you know what would be, I said, you're married to me. I said, not to him. And then we had a lot of little rows and that sort of going on. And so I said, do you want to go back to Germany? I said to her, I said, do you want to go back to Germany? I said, then get rid of him. I said, I'll join up again. I said, I can join up again. I'll get in touch with the authorities and I can go back to my unit. And she talked me into it. And I said, yes, I'll go. And I went back to the recruiting office again. And they accepted me again, but I had to wait a month. I had to wait a month before they called me up again. And they gave me another army number, and that's how I got two army numbers, you see, because they had an interval of nearly 3 years.
So did you, once you rejoined the army...
And I went straight back to Stella, and that's where I met my present wife, or my late wife.
How many years did you sign on for?
Another 5 years, yeah. But good, my first lot of service I did was 6 years and 40 days, what they call duration of emergency, And then my demob number come up, and I got demobbed, and I was out for 3 years around, and then went back in again at a later date.
Now, in 1954, you went to Kenya for the Mau Mau emergency.
Mau Mau, yeah.
Can you tell me?
Well, that was when we went, like I say, I rejoined my regiment to Sella, and instead of going back to what I used to do when I came out of the army the first time, I was being a batman at that time, and knew Mrs. Liddell and her husband and whatnot. I didn't go back to my regiment in the barracks or anything like that. Well, I did actually. I was living outside, but I had a job as a medical orderly. I was a medical orderly, and I finished up as a medical corporal in Kenya. And what happened was, I was training to be a medical orderly, and in Germany for 18 months. And then at the end of that 18 months, we went out to we got instruction to get ready to go to Germany. Go to Kenya, so we had to get all dressed up with tropical gear and all the rest of what we had for East Africa, which had all different. Well, we still kept the BDs and that, but we had light uniforms as well, with shorts and whatnot. We had to get rigged up with all the, and then off we, then the whole battalion, no, they sent the advance party away first with all the, with all our transport off to Southampton on a ship, on a previous, earlier ship, which got out there before us, you see, advance party, with too many men. I think there was a major went with the advance party, looking after all the transport and everything, and they had to set up the base camp in Kenya, the base of Mount Kenya. And but we didn't know that, so we didn't know what they were doing, where they were going or anything like that. All we knew is we were going to Africa, and that took us nearly 4 weeks to get there by ship. Went through the Red Sea, through the Suez Canal and that and whatnot, and we went to which we saw some poor guys over that ship there when we went on Suez Canal, when we went through the Suez Canal, and that I got over there into